Hi everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and today I'm really super excited to introduce our guest, which I'll do very shortly. But first of all, I just got an announcement. Really excited to announce that Wellbeing Wizard is now live. Now, this is something that's been happening for 18 months. The development started out with a conversation with my cousin Ryan Manuel, who is an AI expert and an AI founder in out of Hong Kong, and I asked them just about how AI could potentially impact the wellbeing space. And the reason why I wanted to ask him that and is because what I noticed is that schools really want to implement and execute wellbeing across the school. But the issue's been is the time, because behavior issues might come up, or the wellbeing leader might be responsible for behavior issues, implementing the whole program across the school, supporting teachers. But things pop up with spot fires need to be put out. And what I was noticing that schools' wellbeing programs were dropping off a little bit, and that was coming from the teachers. And that's something that I didn't just observe, which I did, but that was coming from the teachers as well. So what we've done, we've created an all-in-one platform that helps teachers create their own wellbeing programs in a matter of seconds, really. We've given the opportunity to also access pre-made resources that if they don't want to create their own, we've got access to, they've got access to resources that they can just access without doing anything. But also they can adapt those pre-made resources using the AI chatbots as well. So there's storybook generators where they can create their own stories for their class, video generators, lessons they can create where they can just select boxes, they create their profile, and it just makes it so easy and quick. And it's built on very tight guardrails for well-being only. So you won't be able to do anything else except purely well-being in school. It's something we're really proud of, and it is just launched. So if you go to wellbeingwizard.ai, you can get started for free, give it a go, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Now, on to today's guest. I'm super excited to introduce Paul Campbell. Now, Paul is the director of School of Play. He's co-director with my good mate, Dale Sidebottom. And they've joined forces over the last couple of years and taken the School of Play to another level. Also, they've just bought out a book, which is called the 365 Days of Play. And we talk about the book. We also dive into how Paul came to be with Dale at School of Play, but also how he got into education. We also talk about how he spent some time at Collingwood, and how also, I guess, connectedness and play, no matter the environment, whether that's sports clubs, professional sporting organizations, or classrooms, or staff rooms, play is something for everyone. And we go into that. He also gives us a great little activity to start off a staff meeting with, and a whole lot more. So really excited for this episode. So without further ado, we'll welcome Paul. Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ash. Thanks for having me, mate. It's great to be here.
My pleasure, mate. And yeah, really been looking forward to having you on. And first of all, though, I've got a question for you. Did you always want to be in education, like as a teacher, like through your childhood and your teenage years? Or did you want to be something else?
No, it's funny where life takes you. I didn't want to always become a teacher. No teachers in my family whatsoever. And obviously, normally people follow parents who are teachers, but not in my family. Quite the opposite. Now, mate, growing up, I had a few aspirations. I either wanted to be a sports photographer. I was a sport nut as a young person and still am a bit of a sport nut. So I wanted to be a sports photographer. Did photography in year 11 and 12 as subjects. It was either that or a chef. And they were my two sort of career pathways that I really wanted to sort of follow. And my old man talked me out of becoming a chef because the hours sucked. In his words, he said, mate, the hours are no good. Trust me, don't do it, even though I love to cook. And then it was photography. And then in year 12, I had an absolute jet, Miss Gunn, Sandy Gunn from Mount Waverley Secondary College. I'll give her a bit of a shout out, but she was my year 12 PE teacher. And just the way she went about things, the way she engaged us, how much fun I had in there. And that just planted a little seed, about potentially following her footsteps and becoming a PE teacher. And obviously she said, listen, you've got a great personality for it. I wasn't 100% really set on sports photography. Once again, my dad was like, that's a bit of a tough field to try and break into in terms of career paths. But I was up in the air a little bit and just put my preferences in for uni. I put in some photography courses and I threw in some PE teaching ones. And lo and behold, I got accepted into Ballarat Uni. And I'll never forget it. I was down at footy training that night, and my old man drove down to footy training with a letter of acceptance and called me over in the middle of footy training. He said, "Oh, you've gone into uni." And I'm like, "What?" He goes, "You got into uni." I said, "Where am I going?" He said, "Ballarat." And I was like, "No, I'm a Melbourne boy." I'm like, "No, I'm not, mate. I'm not going. I'm not going to Ballarat uni. No way." And I'm so glad that he talked me out of that mindset. At the time, I didn't want to leave my family, didn't want to leave my mates. I was 18. And he said, "Nah, it'll be the best thing for you." So I remember packing up my Commodore, and he gave me $500 and packed up my Commodore and all my belongings and had nowhere to stay, and drove up that highway as an 18-year-old and pulled off the little tabs at uni, for rooms to rent and whatnot. And it's funny, it's crazy. The guy that came and met me, a guy called Adza, is now probably one of my best mates. You know what I mean? And that's 20 years on. And those 4 years up at Ballarat Uni of moving out of home and was incredible. You know what I mean? And then the rest is history. Became a PE teacher and loved it. We traveled the world first with the guys I met at uni. And it's funny how the fork in the road moment, if I had that mindset of, no, I want to stay home and not be brave and those sorts of things and not go to Ballarat Uni, it would have been a completely different life. But probably one of the best decisions I've made, I reckon, was driving up that freeway down at Ballarat and putting the big boy pants on. But that's how I got into teaching. And I was overseas in the States post-uni, and I got a phone call about July from a principal at a little school called Broadford Secondary College. Had no idea where that was. It ended up being an hour and a bit up the Hume Freeway from where I lived. And he said, "I've got a job for you when you get back, so give me a call." And I thought I'd go and do that for 6 months, Ash. I thought I'd do that for 6 months. It's a bit far from home. And 7 years later, I was still driving up that Hume Freeway every day just because of the culture of the place. And the principal, John Patterson, his leadership was incredible. And the way he built a culture of connectedness and just really took an interest in everyone. And the place just felt good. And I loved being there. So I ended up going to that school for 7 years, which was awesome. But yeah, that's the story of how I first got an education.
That's a great story. It's so interesting. I love asking that question because everyone's got their different paths. Like some people, as you say, like had family that are teachers. My dad was a teacher, but to be honest, I didn't necessarily want to be a teacher myself, but I ended up going down that path. And yeah, so there's so many different stories, and some like always ask that question, whether it's on the podcast or at a teacher training. And you get some really want to be a teacher through their childhood and through their teenage years, and they achieve that, but others just fall into it. And it's really interesting.
I find some people fall into it because of that passion, and some people fall into it because they think the holidays are great, yes, right? And they go, "Oh, yes, it's great. We get 12 weeks pay and those sorts of things, that mythical ham." And then they find out very quickly you need those 12 weeks because it's a pretty tough industry to be in. But if you don't mind me asking, mate, what was your, other than teaching early days, so 17, 18, what were you thinking about being?
Well, I wanted to be a AFL footballer. Okay. So I went down that path. My uncle was a footballer. My uncle was Mark Micken, who's was first ever best and fairest at the Crows when they came into the competition in 91. And he was the first ever captain of the Brisbane Bears. So I had great role models. And my auntie Pat, my mum's sister, went to two Olympics basketball in 84 and 88. So I really wanted to follow in their footsteps. And I was on the right path, like through the pathways. But I got to about 20 and realised this might not happen. So then I had to have a think about, okay, what do I want to do? And a couple of part-time jobs I had was going out to schools and doing clinics with football and cricket. And I really enjoyed it. And then I thought, well, what about being a PE teacher? And that's how it came about. So I ended up starting or teaching when I was about, I reckon I just turned 21 when I started, or maybe 20, can't remember, maybe 21. And then graduated 4 years later. And luckily enough, at the end of my first year of teaching in when was it? 2000, 2004. It was term four. I started at Emmanuel Primary School where I stayed for 12 years and teach PE. So that's how I got into it. And
there you go.
Yeah. Everyone's got their paths.
They do, don't they? They do. I love it, mate. And I was much the same. Growing up, I wanted to be an athlete as well, a footballer and whatnot. And awesome at the rep teams. We had the same, didn't quite make it. And need the backup game plan. But it turned out to be a good one. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, from teaching now, you have left the classroom, so to speak, and now you're with Dale Sidebottom and the School of Play.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that transition a bit about that transition, and then what is School of Play for the people who don't know?
Yeah, no worries. I'll tell you how I came about to be a director of the School of Play. So I was an assistant principal, so in the education game, worked my way up to an assistant principal level. And I was in at a conference, at a principal's conference, and Dale was doing a keynote presentation. I was a principal in the crowd. And first and foremost, he'd just come from the birth of his first child, like that night, literally overnight, his first child had just been born. And he came straight from the hospital, straight to do his keynote. I thought, man, this guy's crazy. In the first, like, how many people would do that, right? And his keynote was incredible, super inspiring. I turned to my principal at the time. I was an AP and I said, listen, this guy's great. We should think about getting him out to work with our staff and students, and sort of thought nothing of it. And it was about a month later, I walked out of my local IGA, which is a little supermarket here in Chelsea, and he walked past me. We didn't know each other from a bar of soap. And I was with my wife at the time, and she said, I said, that's Dale Sidebottom, who I was talking to you about, who I saw. And she said, oh, you should go say hello. And I'm like, oh, nah, I'll let him go. It's fine. She's like, no, go say hello. So I was like, righto. So I turned around. I went, hey, Dale. And he sheepishly sort of looked over his shoulder thinking, who's this going to be? And I went up to him and said, oh, my name's Paul. I watched you a few weeks ago at this golf course that you print your keynote. And he remembered me because he asked for a volunteer in one of his activities, and it was crickets. And I put my hand up and shared a story about a footy grand final that I just won. And he said, oh, you're the guy that spoke about the footy grand final. He goes, thanks, mate. That was getting really awkward. Thanks for breaking the ice. And we had a bit of a laugh about that. And I just said, listen, I'd be keen to, get you out to work with my staff and students. He said, no. So we exchanged numbers. And sure enough, a few months later, he was out doing some work with our staff. And then he did some work with our students. And that sort of took place over about a year period. We sort of formed a pretty good sort of connection, I guess, not a mateship, but a connection. He'd see me presenting and talking in front of crowds of people as I introduced him. And then one day I was keen. He knew that I was keen. I said to him, he said to me, what do you want to do? Is this what you want to do forever? I said, no, to be honest, I'd love to do my own business and run my own thing and run workshops. I've got a huge passion for leadership and team building and culture. And he said, all righto. And I think that just planted a little seed in him. And then he got wind that I was keen to do that. And he gave me a call one day and invited me out for dinner. And, pitched to me to jump on board as a director of the School of Play. And at that time, his company was called Yuga Life, which is plain Spanish. And we put our heads together and came up with a new business name and a few new programs that we can add, a few new strings to the bow. And he was really keen to crack into that school market a bit more. He was doing a lot of corporate work at the time. And it took me about 6 months, Ash, to literally. Yeah, you're in a really comfortable role. You work yourself up to become an assistant principal. I got a young family. And it was my wife that in the end it was really supportive and pushed me out the door and said, hey, you've wanted this for a while and we'll be okay. So I made the big plunge and took a leap of faith and left the teaching world and joining with Dale. And it's been one of the best decisions I've ever made. It's just incredible. The flexibility of my time now, I get to pick my kids up from school. That's as an assistant principal, I was very, very rarely picking my kids up from school. I was getting home at 6 o'clock most nights. So, but not only that, just the flexibility, the variety, you're different crowds, different people, different venues, different organizations, different industries, things like this. I'd never be sitting here having a conversation with you on a podcast, sharing my story with the world if I did make that leap. So, that's my story about how I became a director of the School of Play. I had to be pretty brave, I think, and follow a bit of a dream and a passion. And I know a lot of people have got those and they struggle to actually take that step. But I think we're more capable than what we think we are. We definitely are as human beings and we figure it out, right? So that's it. And there's the School of Play. Simply put, we're a company that really uses play to engage and captivate people. We really want to use play to engage students and human beings and adults alike and get them to connect. That's the thing that I think we do the best is really getting to connect with each other.
Yep.
And in a nutshell, we often say to schools and industries when they say, what do? We say, we trick people into well-being.
that is so funny you say that because, sorry to interrupt, but... I love the play idea. I probably mainly call it game-based rather than play, but basically the same thing.
Yep.
And you play these games with students and you get some really disengaged, whether that's primary school or middle school students participating in these games and the staff can't believe it. Like, they're engaged, because you're tricking them into practicing, but they're playing games, but they're practicing at the same time. So I can
Exactly right.
totally agree with that and get it.
Yeah, and if
I've
you don't
said
label things too much, like if you don't label,
yes.
hey, we're going to play a game that's going to focus on empathy, we're going to play a game that focuses on being kind, that's when you'll lose half the people in the room. But you simply say, hey, we're going to play a game and get them having fun. And then, as you know, you can, the questioning you use, the way you word it, and how you debrief and wrap it all up, and that's when the learning takes place. And before you know it, they're like, that's what we were doing, and that felt pretty good, right? So nothing rocket science to it. It's just using fun and energy and motivation to get them engaged first and foremost, and then the learning can take place. But so our bread and butter is sort of well-being, connectedness. It was how we started, and now we've branched off this year in particular into a lot of student leadership and leadership programs, still using play to really make them, you know, really engaging and enjoyable. And now we've developed an incredible curriculum that was intentionally created for a wellbeing curriculum. That's what it is. But lo and behold, a lot of our activities have a literacy and numeracy focuses in them as well. You know, it's that cross-curricular sort of activities that we're finding a lot of schools are loving. That's us in a nutshell. So I'd say probably 70% education in schools and 30% corporate world is what our business is made up of.
Brilliant. I think just that having that, like when we talk about play or game-based like learning, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't matter if they're a student or an adult. Like it's all relevant for everyone, isn't it?
It really is. And I'll be honest with you, the adults, I think the adults go a bit crazier than the kids, to be honest. I really do. Like our staff workshops, and I'm sure you're the same when you run staff sessions and adult sessions, once they let their guard down, and they just start having fun with their work colleagues, they very quickly forget about what's happening over the school fence or what's happening.
Yeah.
They forget about their marking. They forget about their reporting. They forget about the mortgages. They just get to forget about life for an hour or however long it is. And that's a gift. And I think that's what makes them feel really bloody good when they walk out of those sessions is, oh yeah, I just got to switch off from an hour, because we don't get to do it. As adults, we lose the ability a little bit to let our guard down and be a bit vulnerable and be a bit silly and play and laugh. And so when it happens, that laughter and connection, it feels really good for them.
Definitely.
Hopefully that then inspires them to want to use it in their own classrooms a bit more.
Yeah.
And not only that, inspire them to use it at home a little bit more. And that's the key. So
absolutely. It's feeling, isn't it? As an adult, you're feeling it, and then you pass it on to other people, whether that's students or sorry, the kids at home or the students in the classroom. But I think I've got a theory on like why it works so well for teachers in schools as well, because a lot of the PD that happens, whether that's in a staff meeting or maybe a student or a non-student day where the staff are doing training, that's it boring. Like a lot of it can be boring. But when you introduce that play or that game-based learning, it's so much more fun. Like, and I think like talking about like empathy, like you put yourselves, like you're a teacher, Dale was a teacher, I was a teacher, and you put yourself in the shoes of the audience. And I just remember sitting through some embarrassingly boring stuff over my teaching life, and you want to make it fun and engaging, like so they enjoy it. So I think not only like yes, it's they forget about these things, but they're a bit of shock because it's actually good.
I know, right? And it's funny, like it's a lot of people even running and facilitating classrooms or workshops or PDs don't practice what you preach, and we know you can't chalk and talk at someone for more than 15 minutes at a time, because that's when minds, even adult minds, start wondering. And I'm the same.
It's probably like even probably shorter than that now. It's like
yeah, it is, isn't it? But how many times you sit in a PD and someone's talking to you for 20 minutes, half hour, 40 minutes, and man, everyone's doodling or you know on their phones, whatever it is, and short, sharp. And I'm sure I know your activities are short and sharp as well. But you know, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes activities. Debrief it, move on to something else. Keep it moving. And even, I don't want to go into too much jargon at teacher talk, but even print your slides, you know what I mean? Don't fill words and read off your slides. Like, just have an image and know your stuff. Engage through your words, not through trying to read off that slide. But
100%.
Yes. Yeah. Simple practices make the world a difference.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Totally agree. And just moving on to something else now, your book. Now, I know that you and Dale have brought out a book very recently, 365 Days of Play. Now, how did that book came about? And also, what can people expect if they read it? Because we'll put a link in the show notes to the book. I've got a copy. I'm about to tuck into it. I haven't read it yet. But how do you actually read it? Is it a book that you read straight up, or is it because it's 365 Days of Play, or do you read one
No, it's one day at a time. So,
one day at a time. Yep.
Yeah, some great questions. Thanks, man. It's been so well received, and I'll get back to that in a second. But so it came about from our workshops in schools. A lot of schools were asking us, have we got anything we can use to connect the play and the well-being connectedness we're doing in school over the fence to family homes? How do we get this notion of well-being through play and promoting connectedness into our family homes? Because we know a lot of family homes need that more than ever right now. And that got us thinking. We start and early days, we'd do a couple of parent sessions. And I'll be honest, they weren't incredibly well attended. Schools would get us out, they'd book us in. We'd do a 6 o'clock session for parents to come, and you might get anywhere from 6 to 20 parents, you know, from a whole school. And I get that time is precious, and you know, evenings are hard to find time in with school with kids' sports. So then we thought, right, what else can we do? Let's write a book. We thought if we put everything we know and make it really creative and really simple to use for families and put in a book that families can purchase and have on their coffee table and the kitchen table. And that might then help families with ideas for how to include a bit of play. And it's been incredible. And we've actually found, you know, we've got multiple of our schools we work with, their principals are buying books for every one of their teachers now. Yes, it was intended for families and it's brilliant. Yep. But educators are also finding, man, this has got a different little activity for every day. And they're different. They're very creative. Some of them use no resources or very simple resources. And that's how it's come about. And a lot of families, you know, they see players playing sport in the backyard or getting a board game out, which is brilliant. But a lot of our activities and challenges in there have got nothing to do with board games or sport at all. I'll give you a quick little example. Last night, the 19th of August, it was actually my birthday yesterday, Ash, and it was the 19th.
Happy birthday, mate.
Thanks, mate. And we got it out. We thought, let's do one as a family. It was pretty fitting. It was a Spider-Man one, all about resilience. And the challenge asked us to create our own superhero and have a superpower each. And then as a superhero, we have to think of a bit of a, I guess, an acting theme and act out a scene in saving something or showing resilience. And my wife and I, we were vulnerable. We actually literally made some capes and out of some clothes and some blankets. And the kid, I've got a 5 and a 7 year old, and man, they loved it. And here's my wife and I with my 5 and a 7 year old acting out our superhero little scenes with each other and having a laugh. And then we came together as a family and created one scene together as a family. And the whole thing, 20 minutes, you know what I mean? 15, 20 minutes, the whole thing. But laughter, Hunter and Parker, our kids got to see mum and dad be a bit vulnerable and come down to their level, which is ultimate play. And at the same time, we taught them a heap about perseverance and resilience because that was the theme of the month. So that gives you a bit of a snapshot into what the book's about. You know what I mean? It's not sports and board games and those sorts of things. And it just gives families new ideas on how they can get creative and connect in a really fun way and be a bit silly. You know, I think it's really important for kids to see their parents be a bit silly sometimes and have a laugh with them. So that's the idea. It's definitely not a book where you pick up and read. It's, you know, it's obviously 400 pages long. So every month's got a different theme, such as resilience or connectedness or, you know, self-expression. And then every day has got a different story. And we went really deep on the stories. We did a lot of research and made the stories really interesting. For example, July's athletes and Michael Jordan's day is all about how he loved to sketch and be an artist. Mm. Not many people knew that Michael Jordan was an incredible artist and a great sketcher, right? Everyone knows him for his basketball. And that challenge on that day is to, you know, get doodling and create some sketches together as a family. So I think it's a really interesting read for families because your kid learns something about the world around them or about people in the world, events. They're 3 or 4 minute reads. They're very quick. And then the activity is designed to be a quick 10 minute activity that you do together that is associated with that story for the day. So mate, mine lives on my coffee table. Mine lives on my kitchen table, sorry. And ours is used pretty much most mornings. My 7 year old gets up while he's eating his breakfast, having breakfast. He'll read today's story. Read the challenge and most of the times we'll do it in the mornings. Last night's one, we got a bit way late in the morning. We did it last night, but yeah, it's a really cool resource for families to use. And you might not pick it up every day, but there'll be some days where you've got a lull and you've got nothing on the agenda and you're like, that book's looking at you. You're like, you know what, let's pick it up and see what today's challenge is. And it, you know, 15, 20 minutes, half hour of play together. And I think it's been really, really well received.
That's such a unique format and such a great format. Like there wouldn't be too many books. There's not too many books out like that where you read one page a day, a little story, and then an activity. Like, it's such a great idea. great idea. And as you say, like it's turned into a classroom resource as well for home resources, and they can work in both
Yeah.
situations.
And some teachers, now we go to school, Estelle, they've embedded it in their curriculum. So literally every morning, the first 10 minutes, almost their little activity in the morning is let's get the book out, read, learn a bit about the world, and then let's do an activity together. So it's yeah, it's doing wonders in classrooms and family homes, but we're really proud of it. Yeah, mate, get stuck into it. You'll enjoy it.
Absolutely. But I just want to change direction slightly and go back. Now, is this true? Did you work for the Collingwood Football Club for a while?
I did. Yeah, it was incredible. I jumped out of education for about 5 years, just before I became an assistant principal. So I was a teacher, worked my way up. I was a leading teacher, head of senior school, did all that. And then I started working at the Eastern Rangers Football Club in the TAC Cup League, with the under 18s and 16s, under Darren Bewick, the ex-Eston footballer, and loved it there. And was working a bit of a player development, player welfare role, but a culture. And I was a Collingwood supporter before I got the job at Collingwood, and literally one day my phone rang, and it was when the just as the women's league was starting up and coming in, and they needed to expand their workforce, and yeah, they gave me a call and said, heard some interesting things about what you're doing out in the Eastern Rangers. Would you be interested in coming in for a chat? And at first, I thought it was one of my mates pulling a prank on me. Also, I'll never forget ringing my wife going, don't know if it's true, but the Pies just gave me a call and invited me in for a chat. And yeah, went in for a meeting, and it was brilliant. And they offered me a role. And so 5 years. So once again, left education, took a leap of faith and left education, and worked at the footy club at the Pies there for 5 years. And I was all things player development, player well-being, connectedness, leadership, culture, mindset. And it was, mate, it was phenomenal. It was a really cool ride.
Did you get a chance to, I guess, what I'm trying to ask is, was that a role where you could, I guess, do different activities and play base with those players? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, most definitely. It's interesting. My first year there, was under Nathan Buckley, and I actually never forget it. And I actually was away with the team in Frio, and one of my best mates is a Pies supporter. And I rang him up and I said, oh, I'm not, and I love Bucks, right? I love him. I said, I'm not too sure about how this is all the feel of the place, right? Because it was very serious. And it was a really professionalism, and it didn't feel fun, which is strange. And I wasn't expecting that. And I remember ringing him going, yeah, this is a bit strange. And we didn't perform very well that year. And then lo and behold, the year after that, we changed our mindset to really get the players to connect with each other off the field, get them away from footy, have a heap of fun, play a heap of activities, get them to learn more about each other through fun and play, and really connect them off the footy field. And, no surprises, performance has started to improve. The whole place, 138 people work at the Collingwood Football Club, and the whole place went, ah, and just you could feel relaxing. You've gone from walking on eggshells to being really professional to just enjoying life. And we'd even start playing things like indoor soccer and cricket during footy, so it wasn't even footy, it was actually playing different sports and letting them having fun and scavenger hunts and all sorts of things. And just that element of play away from the footy field really changed the dynamics and how the players saw each other and connect with each other, and performances improved massively. And you know what I've learned, Ash, is that schools are no different. They're no different. If we can be a little bit intentional with, I've got sacrificing in little inverted commas here, with sacrificing 5 minutes of your class time to really encourage connectedness and learning about each other, but in a really fun way. As a teacher, your classroom environment's going to be epic because they're going to enjoy walking to your classroom. The kids feel connected to your class, so they want to come. They're going to give you less headaches because there's less behavioral problems. And then they want to learn. I mean, then you've got them. And then you can ask them. You can get more out of them because you've got them. So it's not rocket science, but I think if you're really intentional with play and connecting people through fun activities, the whole place feels better. So.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. And Dr. Mark Williams, who's like a he's like an expert in connectedness. I had him on the podcast a few weeks ago. He like speaks to, I knew that connectedness was so important, but over the last probably 6 months, I've come to realize even more how it could be the number one thing, really.
Be honest, I agree with you. I think that's the thing you've got to get right first. I think that's the framework, that's the sturdy base. Because once young people in particular, but even adults, feel a part of it and they feel valued and they feel like people in this place actually care a bit about me, that's when they want to show up. And once they're showing up, that's when they'll start listening and, you know, I mean, start taking information, and that's when you actually start to have an impact, right? But until you really work hard on that and be intentional with it, it doesn't happen naturally, unfortunately, because we know a lot of, especially kids and teenagers, can be a little bit cutthroat at times. And you've got to role model it and get them to see the importance of it. But I think connectedness is the glue, to be honest.
Totally agree. And it doesn't matter what area you're in. Like, you could be in corporate, like in the corporate space, sports clubs, in a classroom, within the staff, like staff room. Like, it's, and it can be practiced. Like, it's not something you either have or you don't. Like, it's something that can be intentionally practiced, as you mentioned. And that's what, obviously, you guys at school of play, like, are really big on as well. So do you have, like, maybe a little tip or a little activity that maybe if somebody is listening to this and they're taking a staff meeting, or can include something in a staff meeting?
For sure. Such a simple one. And it's a great question. I'm going to backpedal a little bit there before I get into that one. When I left the Pies, I got tapped on the shoulder to come back into the education system as an assistant principal. Huge school, 2,000 kids. A role popped up, which was the AP of Wellbeing and Positive Education. And at that time, I'd started missing teaching a little bit. Like, I'd started missing being a part of the education system. And it's 5 years on, I thought, you know, this is a great new challenge to come back. And I remember my first few staff meetings in that role, you know, 170 staff, and it was serious. Like, it was serious, and it was agenda, and it was straight into it. And it didn't feel like my first job at that little Brawford Secondary College country school. It didn't feel like that. And I remember sitting there going, oh, this feels differently. You know, I mean, this isn't, I'm not enjoying it. And I love everything, Ash. Like, I'm a big kid. It didn't feel great. And I started to change that around, not being an idiot about it, but I started to bring in, hey, the first 5 minutes, let's bring in some gratitude activities. So let's just get thinking about the good stuff that's going on, have a laugh with each other for the first 5 minutes of our staff meetings. And man, did the whole place change. And the feeling of the place, the laughing, the enjoyment, feeling valued because we actually asked them to reflect on positive things and working on them being the best version of themselves before we got into the agenda. And staff started to feel valued. Like, man, these guys actually care about us. Look, they're actually putting this on the agenda now, you know, gratitude work with Paul, or, you know, whatever, staff connected us with Paul. And they looked forward to it and they thrived on it. And so I firmly believe, no matter what, any organization, corporate, schools, whatever it is, every meeting should be started off with something enjoyable that connects them together and they learn a bit about each other and allows them the chance to reflect on the good things, learn about the positives of each other. I think it does wonders for the culture of an organization, no matter if you're in a school or a business. But a really great one, mate, Gratitude Pictionary. I think it's a winner every day of the week because it's so versatile. But I wouldn't call it Gratitude Pictionary. I wouldn't even call it Pictionary. Like, same again. I literally give everyone a bit of paper and a pen to start off with. Don't explain anything. I say, right. And I'll change the question every time. I go, think of something that has made you smile in the last 7 days. Or think of an act of kindness you've seen, or anything. Think of something that's challenged you. You know what I mean? And just think about it. Don't tell anyone around you. Think about that prompt. And then you go, right, I'm going to give you 90 seconds to draw it. No words, no numbers. And everyone goes, how am I going to draw this? You'll be right. You get going. You start the timer. And lo and behold, everyone loves to doodle and draw. And everyone's drawing, you know, their favorite memory or something that's made them smile or something that's challenged them.
Yep.
And you go, right, I stop there. And then you go, right, we're going to play some Pictionary. And everyone goes, huh? And then you go, everyone in your little groups, take a turns holding up your picture that is no good because I gave you 90 seconds. Have a laugh at the pictures. And everyone's got to try and guess your favorite memory or something that made you smile or something that challenged you this week. And through that game, it opens up. It's an icebreaker, right? But it's not an icebreaker in your normal sense because it's a lot of fun. You laugh at the drawings. Then you're guessing, you know, what made people smile, and you learn a bit about their week. They're sharing something positive. And it just kicks off your staff meetings in a really fun way because a bit of laughter, and it takes 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Great one to do in your classrooms after holidays or after a weekend. You know, a lot of teachers get back, how are your holidays? Good. Let's go around in a circle one at a time and share something. And every kid's sitting there freaking out, waiting for their turn. What am I going to talk about? You know what I mean? But you play Pictionary with it. And it's a really cool activity. I use it with my kids at home, Ash, as well.
Yeah.
Once a week. My wife and I at the dinner table, we'll get a paper and a pen out as well, and I'll change the questioning every week. And I just think it changes the conversation from how's your day at school? Good. What'd you learn? Nothing. Anything. What was the most, last one I did it 2 nights ago, it was like, what's the most creative thing you saw today? And some of the things the kids drew were really cool. What other people did, so they were celebrating other people's creativeness. And gratitude Pictionary, we call it. That's in our book. We call it gratitude Pictionary. But same deal. Don't label it gratitude Pictionary. Yep. Just give everyone a paper, a pen, and think of a prompting question, and off you go. But I think that's a ripper.
That is a great one. Well, thanks for sharing that. And moving, I've just got one more question about, I know that you did a research project with Dr. Manny Raddick at the La Trobe University. Tell us a little bit about that and some of the key things that you discovered from that research project.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, mate. We've done a few now. So we did one early days all through the Trobe. We did one with our staff PDs. We call them staff fun shops, because workshops can be a little bit boring, so we call them a fun shop. And we did it with staff, just a one-hour staff PD session or a fun shop on connectedness. The results were off the charts, like a 90% surge in energy and vitality, 34% increases in well-being and sense of appreciation for life, mood increases. So the results in the adult research study was incredible. That was really cool. And then last year we did one on our curriculum and our student agency and leadership programs. And what that is in a nutshell, we want to think about how we can sort of scale what we do. And one way we come up with that is we actually go into schools now and we teach the student leadership teams how to be little Dale and Pauls. Mm. We teach them how to facilitate our play-based wellbeing workshops. And then we give them access to an online platform. And then they, once we've left, they then deliver student fun shops and fun to the rest of the school. And it's a sustainable model because it keeps going for the rest of the year. Gives the student leaders multiple exposures to practice in their leadership, which is unreal. And we did studies on that and the results were incredible. The students, self-belief and confidence really grew. That was a really, really cool one. Their sense of connectedness is probably one that's improved the most, especially with our curriculum. A lot of schools are really striving, they've got the Attitudes to School survey and they're really striving to improve that sense of connectedness. And our curriculum was found to really improve that sense of connectedness through La Trobe University. And that was the biggest tick for us. That was awesome. But also, a lot of individual students reported that they had more control or autonomy over their own well-being and able to do it in a fun way. A lot of kids struggle with gratitude journaling. We don't journal at all. We don't ask them to write three things they're grateful for, but through playing a lot of our activities, they'll talk about two or three things they're really grateful for.
Exactly.
They've learned they can practice gratitude in a really fun way, and that helps where their focus is going in their mindset. So the results from the Trobe Uni were nothing but positive. We're really, really pleased with that. So, we're looking to do another one in 2026 because we've just created another new curriculum for some kindergartens and some other areas of school, some special schools. Hopefully the results are a kick-ass as well. But no, it was great. It's good.
Yeah. Excellent. It's important to have that, those findings as well, because a lot of people do want to see those evidence base for what you're doing.
They really do.
And it's always important to do. So it's great that you've been able to do that with La Trobe, and Mandy's great at what she does. So excellent. So mate, really appreciate it. Where can people find more about you, whether that's the website, contact details, and the book? We'll put the book link in the show notes.
Nice.
Where can people find you, mate?
The schoolofplay.co is where we're found. I'm also on LinkedIn, just Paul Campbell, director of the School of Play. Feel free to reach out at any stage. I love, sounds a bit cliche, but I love connecting with people. I'm so human centered, it's not funny. And I love learning from other people. I really do. I'm an infinite learner. Reach out, contact me, catch up. That's great. The book, simply type in 365 Days of Play by Dale Sidebottom and Paul Campbell. It's on Amazon, Booktopia, other book retailers. If you Google that, you'll find it somehow, I'm sure. Yep. Flick us an email, team@theschoolofplay.co. is my email address. But yeah, you know, this has been brilliant because it's nice to be able to get out and let people know that we exist.
Yep.
But yeah, made it hard. I'm still a big kid, and you're much like you, Ash. I still play footy. I just
I
got
don't,
back.
I don't play, mate.
Yeah, play anymore.
I can't move.
I turned 44 yesterday, Ash, and I'm still playing footy, which is insane.
That's
you know,
I
went snowboarding on the weekend at Hotham, and I definitely, you know, we've written a book called 365 Days of Play, and I definitely practice what we preach, and I'm a big kid at heart, which is awesome.
Brilliant, mate. No, appreciate your insights, mate, and sharing everything you have today. And yeah, highly recommend getting the book. I've got my copy, so looking forward to getting into it. And I definitely know that we don't have to read the 400-page book in a
No,
row.
you
We can take it
don't.
daily and do one of the stories, one of the stories and an activity each day rather than
That's it. And mate,
overlap.
I want to thank you too, Ash, because long before, I'll be honest, long before I was the director of the school company, I followed your journey with Growing the Gratitude. As you know, I've told that before. So when you gave me the invite to jump on, it was a no-brainer. And I was like, mate, that is awesome, because I was actually listening to your podcast and then following your journey before I became a director. So you know, I learned from you before I got into that industry. So, mate, I want to say thanks. And
Oh.
the work you're doing around the country is incredible. And you should be really proud of yourself. And yeah, so thanks for pioneering that space. And, mate, it's awesome.
No, I appreciate the very kind words, mate. And, yeah, thanks for sharing that. That means a lot. Thank you.
Nice.
All right, mate. Well, thanks for coming on, and we'll put the links in the show notes, and really appreciate it.
Easy. Thanks, Ash. Take care.